Hey everyone, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you may be. You have an episode here with two Asian dudes talking. Here you have Andrew and Derek here, and we will have an interesting topic today. What are we talking about, Andrew?
We're talking about careers, your job, the way you make money and make a living.
All right, the fun thing.
So you don't end up homeless on the street.
Yes, the job that we had to drag ourselves up Monday morning and...
God, I hate that, waking up early for the job. That's like the work of everything that I do for work. Like, you know, the long hours, the office politics. I think the one thing I hate the most is having to get up at a certain time early in the morning. I can't stand
for the job or getting up in the morning, two different things.
But no, especially for the job. Because I notice when I'm not working, getting up was actually easy. I don't even need an alarm and I'm up by like 6:30.
Okay, so that just tells our listener one thing, that we might not be, you know, be terribly excited about getting up for a job.
Yeah, getting up for a job is no fun.
Okay, so jobs. So Andrew, what do you do? I mean, what is your job? What is your career?
Good question. I work in the legal technology field. Now, when I say that, most people don't really know what that means. Essentially, it's using technology to help in the practice of law. That's the best way I can say. I mean, and in
so
that,
would this be right? Utilize stuff you find online as a resource or as a data point?
No. That's more like legal research.
Okay.
So legal technology is more. I'm going to give you an example. The one of the main areas I focus on is electronic evidence discovery. So when one company or one entity sues another,
right,
the evidence that's collected for that lawsuit nowadays is all electronic.
Yeah.
Right? It's not really paper anymore, although it's obviously still paper.
Emails.
Right. But yeah, mostly emails, your Facebook postings, your internet sites, and things like that. So one of the things I do is... collecting that information, processing it, and helping the attorneys review it, search through it, and then producing it for their lawsuit, for their trial.
Okay. So as part of the evidence collection process.
Yeah. But that's actually really just a small part of it, because there's a whole bunch of other things. But essentially, it's just technology combined with law. So
okay.
That's the bulk of it.
But, okay. So you are trying to get a sense of what, because I'm not clear.
Okay.
So you're the guy that when there's a case, whatever that may be, you're the guy that the attorneys go to, hey, dig up the dirt on this guy, and you basically...
I'm more the guy like, because I usually work for fairly large law firms that are probably mostly on the defense side, where... You know, insurance companies are getting sued, or the big companies of, you know, businesses,
right,
Fortune 500 companies are being sued. I'm the guy where the attorney says, hey, our client's getting sued and they have a lot of data. Can you help us sort through it all? You know, find how to look at it, you know, vet through it, and then give us the important stuff and let us, you know, fix it so that we can look at it more easily. That's what I do.
So you sort through the data. Do you read them and make a judgment, say this is relevant, not relevant, or is that the attorney's?
No, that's the attorney's job. I may help them find ways to make categorize it easier, because, you know, there's millions and millions of documents,
right,
in most cases. So
got it.
Generally, I don't do that.
Got it. Okay. So they still need to read through other stuff. Okay,
yeah.
That's interesting. So interesting feel.
Yeah, interesting, but it's you know, it could be, it could not, depending on how you look at it. What do you do, Derek? That's much more, I think what you do is much more interesting than what I do.
So it's not easy to describe. I could easily tell people I'm in the finance field, but that's a very generic
term. When people say they're in the finance field, the only thing I think of is, oh, Wall Street scum.
Well, I wish I am filthy rich. No, that's not the case. So, you know, there's a lot of, when I say people in finance, there's a lot of areas. So in particular, what I'm doing, at least in the past, past 13 years, is in the commercial banking area. So I work for a commercial bank, and when you look at a commercial bank, there's multiple areas. Obviously, there's most banks has a retail side.
Right.
The stuff that consumer deal with, branch, credit card, all stuff. Yeah. I don't deal with that. And there's a commercial side where the bank actually deal with the business. When you are a business, you deal with banks twofold. One, you need a bank to provide you with loans to support your business. That's one area. The other area, you need a bank to provide you with the treasury services on the back end that deal with, your payroll, your payments to your vendors. So those are the two, generally speaking, those are the two big category of services that a business need from a bank. So I deal with the side that loans money to the business. Now there's many segments to this. So when you start dig it down, there's many segments to this commercial banking side loan area. You have different tiers of commercial banker that provides different service. The most easy way to understand is, you go to a bank, you get a loan, right? But there is M&A bankers that provides financing for M&A transaction.
Right.
There is bankers that just lend based on inventory, what we call asset-based lending. There's banker that provides lending to only specific industries. There's banker that only does letters of credit.
So which is your focus?
So my focus is to provide for now. So I've been into multiple areas of the bank. So when you look at commercial bank, I've been to the back end office where you do the finance side, did a little bit of compliance. Most of my time in commercial banking has client facing, lending to different business. I've lent to, I've done M&A lending, leverage lending. So when there's a buyout, company A buys company B, the big shot Wall Street guy comes in and say, here's $100 million, I wanna buy the company, and we come in, we provide $100 million to finance that business. So I did that. What I'm currently doing in the past 2.5 years, almost 3 years, is really dealing directly with private equity firms and providing capital for them, to help them grow, right? Private equity is
money for exchange of a certain share, right? I mean, are you guys than the bank?
No. So private equity, in the sense that private equity funds. So that industry is for outsiders, it's like, private equity is evil, but that's actually driving the economy, believe it or not. It's basically essentially, if anyone or listener has a pension or a big school has an endowment, how they invest the money is not directly through public equity, not stock, right? They put a portion of their money into buying index fund, that's something that's publicly traded. Private equity is a sector where these capitals are not as liquid, and this money goes into a particular manager. The manager will take this money and invest in small to mid-sized business that are not public company. They could be owned by a group of investors, a part of a bigger bank, or bigger company, where they spin this business out. So they will put money into these business and grow them. And in terms, create jobs. So when they, and just buying, the good corporate America, buying anything, you don't use all equity, you use some financing, debt. And that's what I do. I basically go in there, provide the debt alongside with them. So
that doesn't sound too exciting, but it turns the wheel of America. So good for you.
Yeah, as it could be really boring things for if you're not interested in finance.
Right. So how did you pick this field?
I didn't pick it. They picked me.
I was gonna say the same thing about my job, but go ahead.
Yeah. I honestly, going through college, I didn't know what I wanted to do. When I was in my senior year in college, I was like, okay, oh crap, I need a job. I honestly, well, throughout my life, I always want to be an entrepreneur and a business owner, but I have zero guidance on how to do it and what I need to do to prepare myself to do it. I just, you know, for lack of a better term, sleepwalk through my most of my young adulthood till like last year, senior year. So
I think everybody did that. I know I did. So.
Well, I think our generation maybe, but there's, I would see our next generation, we will provide some guidance to them.
But still, even the with the guidance, you know,
they might still
I think there is a tendency for you to sleepwalk through your college years because, you know, it's, what do you want to be with your job? Your career seems so far off.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what I was thinking. So I didn't know what I wanted to do. I think at that time, the Big Five accounting firm came and interviewed on campus. I sat down, interview. The guy really liked me. Not that I have a good grade, because I spent a year in abroad.
Right.
And you know, that impressed him, and he said, "Well, why don't you?" You know, I got my first gig at a big accounting firm, one of the Big Five at that time. And then just, you know, before you know it, I was looking for a job that would pay me more. So whatever, you know, I would always craft my resume and say, oh yeah, I know that. And and honestly, I always wanted to, you know, truth be told, like, what do I want to do? I want to be a Wall Street scumbag, make tons of money. But I, you know, I don't fit that profile, and they didn't pick me, you know, because of I don't have the sort of pedigree, right? Which is, you know, I really.
It's all about the connection at that point.
Right. So I didn't have that. Never really made it. So I tried my best to get into the highest paying job, and whatever's available. And you know, as it just like correlates to banking, right? So commercial banking, so private equity field seems to be very attractive, pays good, and you know. And just, you know, it's like whatever's jobs available and they like me, want to hire me and give me a shot.
I went for it.
And that's how I got to where I am.
That's pretty much right. That's pretty much the same way I got into my field. Same thing, you know, I've always wanted to do business. But I, as far as career goes, I think starting about high school, I was thinking if I did go to college and then had a career, it would probably be a lawyer. To be a lawyer because, you know, at the time anyway, it appealed to me because it was, you know, about logical arguments to uphold justice and the law. And the TV shows, you know, in TV shows, lawyers are exciting jobs, man.
So you wanted to become a lawyer for justice?
Honestly.
Not to make money?
Not to make money, honestly. I actually thought, you know, uphold justice and the law.
Right. You could be a DA and you don't make much money.
That's what I was thinking, actually. Right. But so I eventually got this job in a law firm.
Because I remember you started working fairly young.
You know, now that you remind me, my first job was actually in high school for a law firm.
Okay.
Because I wanted to be a lawyer. And they had this, I don't know what kind of program it was for high school students to work in a law firm during the summer.
So you didn't sleep through your college because you have the foresight. It was like, okay, if I want to be a lawyer, I want to get a head start.
Let's just say I didn't go after it as ambitiously as I could have. You know what? I should look. And so I did look. And as soon as I found something I went for, I didn't really study up on what I was looking for.
Right.
I got a summer intern thing at a law firm downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for like 2 years in a row just to see what it's like. And I think one of the attorneys there told me, if you want to be a lawyer, go be a paralegal for a while to see if it actually appeals to you.
Right.
So I did. When I was in college, which I really hated, I mean, I hate it so much that I missed a whole bunch of classes.
See, you have all the freedom.
and maybe that was the problem. I had all the freedom in college, so I decided, you know what, why would I even waste sitting in class?
Yeah.
So I went to this kind of boot camp at a local UC to get a paralegal degree. Like, because they had this short thing where you could spend 6 months in class and you just walk away with a paralegal degree and just be a paralegal, right? So that's what I did. And when I did that, I went to be a paralegal and it was for like a little small firm in Glendale. It's like 20 attorneys or so. And I found out it's not as glamorous as it is on TV.
Nope, it's not.
And it's damn boring. Is what it is. Yep. The attorneys, they spend most of their time reading and writing documents and really boring, not even important documents. It's not like contracts or anything. It's just like dull stuff.
Yeah, no, I can attest to that. I work with plenty of attorneys when we're drafting loan docs.
Yeah, when you deal with like M&A, it's just nothing but paperwork.
Nothing but paperwork, and they would fight over like very minute language. Yeah, like, well, and it's not even from a risk standpoint. From what I said, I was like, guys, you're spending more money than potentially what I would lose.
You're spending like, you know, because they're all billed for, you know, $300 to $500 an hour, and they're arguing over one sentence that has no real impact. So yeah, I didn't want to be an attorney after that. But luckily, when I was working as a paralegal, this was when I was working as a paralegal, it was back in 1999, somewhere around there. So it's like the dot-com boom and bust.
Time. I remember that time, yeah.
Yeah, so technology was really important all of a sudden. And the law firm started bringing in all these tech, and I happened to be pretty technical on my own.
Right.
You know, I just like computers. So a lot of the jobs needed a lot of tech skills, which I was able to bring in to the firm, which, you know, impressed everybody in the firm.
Well, I do remember at that time, that's when sort of commercial business first realize there is a switch.
Yeah.
There's a transition between what we were doing, like technology switch.
Right. Which is like, there was this, all of a sudden everybody realized, you know, technology is going to play an important role in basically every industry.
Yep.
So then that's when I found out that there was this field where, at the time it was called like litigation support, where you just have technology supporting the attorneys, because attorneys can't can't handle technology. They can't.
Right.
In fact, I can tell you a little story. I was there was this once I was working on a law firm, and I was told to go in and talk to a partner and show him how to use a specific software.
Yeah.
And I walk in, I'm trying to find
his. Did you teach him how to turn on the computer?
Yeah, here's the thing. I walked in and I couldn't find his computer.
Right.
I couldn't see it on his desk anywhere. It's like I'm looking around, where's his machine?
Right.
And I ask him, and it turns out he's been using his desktop to hold up his trash can. His trash can was too low for him, and he needed to be
higher. I guess the kind of money he made, he could afford to do that.
And I was like, okay, I don't even know why I'm here to teach you to use it. It's off. It's on the floor holding up his trash can, and I thought, whatever. So I think because of that, because a lot of attorneys don't use technology or is afraid of technology, the field I went, just this niche field of legal tech, just was booming like crazy. Like they were just hungry for people who actually knew, had a legal background, but can also use computers and software.
Right.
And they would just hire anybody. No college degree needed, and just paying high salaries for people.
Wow.
Which is how I fell into it. In fact, and you know this, right? Because once I got the job, they were paying me so well, I thought, why am I even still going to college, to finish this degree and basically, well, be doing what I'm doing now? So I actually dropped out and just worked my job, like continuously, and just worked for a couple of law firms and eventually, you know, switched over to consultant.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing that ever since. So. Yeah.
So was that a good choice? Like going back at it, I mean, looking back at it, do you think that was a good decision, or do you think that you would have done differently? Had you sort of,
if I had known what I know now back then, I would have quit. I would have never went to college to begin with. To be honest, I wouldn't have wasted those first couple of years.
Okay.
Now, that's if I was gonna stay in the same field, because the college degree. I mean, I have one now, but whether it actually impacts, that it would have had no impact on my, you know, what I could have done for my job.
Right.
But then I think it's also because this field is so new, that there's not really like coursework I could have studied for it anyway. So, for this particular job, it wouldn't have had any impact. So I would have been probably better off had I skipped the college thing and went directly into legal tech. But for all the listeners out there, this is not a common thing, and a college degree is very useful, and I would advise everybody to go to college. But for me, it just worked out that way. So
I see. Yeah, no, it's I would say that, you know, nowadays with a college degree.
Especially nowadays, I think you need like a master's degree if you want to get in right now.
Yeah, I mean, even with a college degree, it doesn't mean much. Unless you go to one of the best school, top 10 school, most college degree nowadays at all. Okay.
Yeah, it's just more of it's like a high school degree now. Everybody assumes you have one before you can step through the door.
Yeah. Interesting, huh? So you kind of interesting there, because if Kiwa mentioned that you wouldn't have gone to college if you would stay in the same job.
Yeah.
So would you have, if you were to go back and choose again your career, would you have chosen a different career path?
Yeah, I think I would have. I would have actually done something else. It may not have been, I don't know specifically what I might have done. Maybe I would have been an actual writer, or at least I think maybe I would have worked. I think but if I were going to stay in this career, I think I would have really stuck with like working for a slower pace, like for the city attorney's office.
Then you write on your spare time.
Yeah, and that's, I think that would have been ideal. If I do what I do now, it's for the city's attorney's office at a much slower pace, and spend the rest of my time actually being a writer.
We're not saying government jobs are.
No. I mean, I think I think I appreciate the government jobs more, because I'm actually working with a few city attorneys now, so I have a better understanding of what their work schedule and life is like, and the casework that they take on. I understand more of that now, because now, you know, this past 10 to almost 20 years of working, it's high stress, high speed, but the thing that really bugs me is it's high stress and high speed, but not for anything that's worthwhile. You know, it's lawsuits that aren't going to have any productive impact on society. It's really just one company blaming another and knowing they're going to settle anyway, but they blame each other as part of their business strategy, if anything else. For instance, there was a time where I had to help client defend lawsuits that we knew were bogus, but the guy was just suing them to make sure they settle and
you know, get hoping to have a settlement.
Hoping to have a settlement and pocket, you know, a few hundred grand just for the heck of it. It had no impact on society other than switching, you know, transferring funds from one company to another. Versus if I had worked for the city, I would think, and I've seen that most of what they do is impactful. You know, it's gonna affect the livelihood.
Yeah, certain public works would have direct impact to certain community.
And it's an actual job where you have time for yourself.
Work-life balance.
Yeah. I remember first couple of years when I first started working in this industry for a really large law firm. I don't know why I even allowed myself to do this, but I went into work on a Monday morning.
Yeah.
I didn't leave work until Wednesday night.
Did you sleep there?
No, I didn't even sleep, really. I just like went 24/7. I might have taken a nap, 30-minute nap in between. But because it was such a rush project, I had no choice.
All right, so here's a question. Did you get paid?
Yeah, I got paid for it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the thing, though.
All right. Okay.
I think the only reason I didn't give it up.
Because it paid.
It paid, and it paid really well.
Yeah.
I mean, it paid really well. Considering at the time when I was doing this, I didn't have a college degree.
All right.
It paid really well.
So lesson learned, and I want to sort of that's a very good point, because I think what I take away from that is you initially thought being a lawyer was very interesting, and part of the interest is because it provides service to a community, provides some meaningful service to someone and has an impact to someone and provide justice. But once you get into it, you realize, oh, that's not the case.
That is so not the case.
But you still do it because of the money.
Yes, because of the money.
So I would say that, you know, for our listeners out there, if you're young and if you're looking on a career path, you know, the immediate gain might not be the most beneficial. Reason why I say that is I myself went through the exact same thing. When I choose, so I did the finance field, I didn't know what I was doing, but you know, I go in there thinking that there will be money. So after my 4 years in an accounting firm, first thing that I did is, you know, I went after the job that would pay me the most.
Right.
Which is not the smartest thing to do.
Yeah, now we know it's the wrong focus. You shouldn't do that.
Right.
Because it's that appeal is actually pretty fleeting.
But I think it was extremely difficult, especially for folks like you and I, where you know, our parents are, you know, still, you know, they, you know, they're okay, right? They don't need our support.
Do they
need your support?
I mean, they're getting by.
Right, they're getting by. So we don't, I mean, for the amount of money that we're seeing at the time, it's a meaningful chunk of change, right?
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. So to us, at least to me, it seems like, oh my God, if I could do this, why would I need the other stuff? You know, why do I care about, you know, 10 years down the line where I should be, right? If I keep on making the money that I'm making today, I should be fine. But what I'm missing is that, well, not the case, right? Because later on in life, you have more obligation, your situation change, and your lifestyle change, and you need to keep up with yourself, right? So I didn't realize that at that point. So I went and I had opportunities throughout my career. I would say there's probably one mistake that I remember was that I had an opportunity where, you know, the company, the firm, is actually gonna pay for my MBA full ride. It's like, and at the time I was doing really well financially. I was like, gosh, man, I would graduate from my MBA and they would be making the same money as I am today.
Yeah, exactly. So you make that choice between the two and you hold the balance and you thought, doesn't make sense financially.
Right.
So you give it up. But
well, had I know today, yeah. I would have you know, worked my butt off, because it just means a lot more work. I would have done that.
Yeah. So that's the difference. I think it's more chase the passion, you know, or at least don't put as much weight on the financial side.
It's hard though. I realize, look, we gotta pay the bills. And if you're out there and if you move out and you have a family, when you have a girlfriend, it's different.
And I think you also get used to it, right? Once you're actually making fairly decent income.
Yeah, you don't want to step down.
Yeah, you're living a certain lifestyle, so driving a certain car. You don't want to give that up, and then you're chasing even more. So it's it takes a while to readjust your mindset, I think.
Okay, well, that's very good point. So I mean, now that you've been through, you know, is it what, 15 or almost 20 years, right?
Yeah, almost 20 years. Yeah.
Do you like it? I mean, obviously, you said I can't say you don't like it, but right now
That's a question, you know, that's a question I've been asking myself for like literally the past year.
Right.
Do I like what I'm doing? Do I hate it? I can definitely tell you I don't hate it.
Okay.
But
is it because of the money?
No.
Let's leave the money factor
aside. Leaving the money factor aside, even though it is still, you know, fairly important component. Leaving that aside, I don't hate it, because I am good at what I do.
Right.
And I think because it is such a specific field, I've you know, especially because I've done so much, and it has been 20 years. I have a bit of a reputation in the industry now, and I'm proud of that. You know, so I don't hate what I'm doing. It is useful work in a sense,
but it has value
of some sort. Not the type of value I thought it would have had in the beginning, but it does have value, and especially now. You know, I spend a good portion of my time now teaching this very subject to, you know, a couple local universities. So there's value there.
Yep.
Definitely, right? Teaching the next generation, helping everybody kind of navigate through this. So I enjoy that that bit of it. So I definitely don't hate it, but I definitely cannot say 100% that I love this career path. And I think, you know, now that you bring this up, this question, there's this moment, I think I can even define the moment when I started questioning whether I want to do this for the rest of my career was when I switched over to consulting. Mm-hmm. I went to that same big accounting firm that you were working for.
Yep, I remember.
Right. Because it was interesting how I got there. I was working in the law firm, I was already thinking, you know what, I don't want to be in the law firm forever, mm-hmm. because there's no growth for this industry inside a law firm. It has to be in the consulting or the service provider side.
Right.
That's where the real growth is. And I wrote an article in the local journal, legal newspaper, about this topic. And then the accounting firm, one of the partners read it and called me up and said there was a position open for them. And I figured, okay, maybe the reason I'm kind of questioning myself is because I don't want to stay in an office environment. Maybe the consulting side makes more sense. So I did. I switched over to the consulting side. But then even then, I didn't really find myself like overly joyful there.
I would say, and maybe just what I experienced going through my career, consulting is helpful when you're doing the actual work. As you move up the ladder, you become more of a salesman.
Yeah, exactly. You're now marketing
the
more
service.
You're
talking to client. True. You do a lot of industry conferences. You represent. You have ideas, but most of the time, your focus. You know, you've been told, and you may partner with, you've been told that look, you need to bring in business.
Exactly.
How to market the rest of the firm and all these products.
Let me tell this. When I was actually at that kind of accounting firm, it was getting so to the point where I always drove away for lunch because I wanted to get away from the office every hour. Whether or not I was actually hungry or needed to eat, I just spent that lunch hour and drove away. And I remember this specific location, like at the corner of a certain street where I would drive to. I would see these two people, sign spinners. You know those guys who spin the signs and flip them around and stuff. Two people.
Going out of business sale.
Things like that, right? And I see these two people every time during lunch. I see the same two people spinning signs. And they're probably spinning from two different companies, but they're standing on the same corner, right? This one guy is fairly middle age or so, and every day he would be holding the sign, leaning against the streetlight or lamppost, and just have his headphones on. And he's just listening, and he's just holding the sign and standing there. You can tell he hates that he has to do this.
He doesn't care.
He doesn't really care.
Yeah.
Literally, right next to him is another guy, who's a sign spinner. Every time I see him, while this guy's leaning next to the post, he's spinning his sign and dancing.
Like, very enthusiastic.
Very enthusiastic, full on dance move, like twirling and everything and moving his feet. And, you know, just it's almost like he's listening to a song. Every day when I go to lunch, I see these two. And I look at them, I always think to myself, they're doing the same work. Why is that guy so happy and this other guy is like so dead, bored and tired and hate his job? And it was I think that's the moment when I asked myself, do I really love my job as much as this sign spinner guy?
Who are you? Which one of these guys am I?
And because when I drove, they were there every day. Every time I drive by for lunch, they were there. And I had to ask myself that question every day, which is why eventually, like in less than a year and a half at that kind of accounting firm, I left.
Right.
And just kind of went out on my own and freelance. And that I think that scene stuck with me. So I don't know why, but it's just stuck with me. And I kept asking myself every day because of them.
Well, no, I think that's a good scene, right? I think that's a scene for at least specifically for a younger listener, right? I mean, same job, like you say, same job. You have two different, completely different attitude.
They were probably paid the same too, I bet you.
For sure, right? Yeah. And then you have just two completely different attitude. One just like going about it,
so
high energy. Yeah. One's just like, is this?
One's just given up while the other's like, yeah, this is just the beginning of my life. And he's so, yeah, it was that moment that I think I started questioning, is this the
best? Well, I don't know if it's true. Like for me, I definitely have moments like that where throughout my career, it's like, is this industry right for me? Or is this my career path? Is this my calling? Should I do something different? And I think those are the times that
at least for me, is when I've probably on a down note, right?
Right.
Because I think in
because some days you have a bad day in the office, right? And you start questioning everything.
Right, right. And you know, there are days that, like, similar to you, I've been doing this, you know, almost 20 years too. Yeah. You know, going back at it, would I pick the same path again? I don't know, because when I think about it right now, I don't know if I want to. I certainly don't mind going down the same path, but I'll do things differently.
Right, right.
But would I pick the same career?
Because when you ask that question, you then think of, what else would I have done that would have been
exactly? Just, you know. I was thinking of, well, what else would I have done, right? Because I study in this field.
Right.
And you wanted at high school to want to be an attorney. I wanted to be a business entrepreneur. Well, this is the direction that we're moving to. It just happened to take us to where we are today.
Because and I think it's like any other decision or anywhere else, really, right? It's, you know what you don't want, but you don't necessarily know what you do want.
Right.
And like the old saying, right? The grass is always green on the other side. Maybe you go down another path and you think same complaints.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you have, you know, there's always other challenge on the other side. And, you know, I guess, you know, standing on where we are today is actually, when you look at it, I mean, it's not too bad, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, which is why I say I definitely don't hate it, because it's not bad. I mean, what you've been able to accomplish in the past 20 years, that's fairly decent. You know, it's just something to look back on and kind of be proud of it. I mean, comparing to any other path that I could have walked down, you know, it's pretty decent.
Yeah, and you know, I think we could have chosen a path where we're just like more miserable.
I mean, maybe if I had ended up working for a city government job, I would have been more miserable, because I don't know, it's less money for one thing.
Right.
And maybe there's other, you know, setbacks or pitfalls I can't see right now.
Right.
But
well, let's ask this then, because when you think about, okay, what makes our, you know, our career, what we enjoy most, and just like what makes us, keeps us going, right?
It's almost like that interview questions I've heard, like describe your perfect day.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, does seeing similar people, like similar culture, seeing more Chinese American, seeing more peers such as ours, of, you know, first generation of 1.5 generation immigrant in our world, or similar to us, does that help us, or is that not
that's the question. Do you actually see other Chinese Americans or even Asian Americans in what you do? I'll tell you this, in my field, Two things, right? Technology and law. In technology, yeah, I do see a lot of Asians in the field. You know, it's tech. It's almost cliche, actually. In law, the interesting thing is I've seen a lot of young, like first, second year attorneys who are Asian, who are Chinese,
right.
Asian in general. What I don't see is partners, senior attorneys who are Asian.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if that's because previously there just haven't been a lot of Asians interested in the legal field, or they just burn out or just couldn't go into that senior role.
Right.
Like, literally, if I close my eyes...
Or they're smart, they've chosen to take a different path.
But that's entirely possible.
Right.
You know, maybe they took another path with their law degree, but I do not see... Honestly, I do not see a lot of partners, you know, legal partners in law firms. If I even think about it, I'd have a hard time coming up with more than two or three names.
Right. So that's an interesting observation. So I would definitely concur to that, and it could be for various reasons. But similarly, for an accounting firm, you see a lot of for accounting firm, you do see a lot of Chinese, or in general, a lot of Asian, because accounting is at least in today's world, there's still quite popular, those becoming less popular because of AI and technology shift. But it's very popular, you see a lot of Asian, but as you move up the ladder,
You see fewer.
And that's also true for corporate America and banking and commercial banking, where I am today. You don't see much Asian, right? And I have a couple of theories, right? I think in a lot of these service-oriented roles, attorneys, lawyers, as glamorous as it seems to others, but when you're in it, and you and I have been in this in the industry, when you get up the ladder, when you move up to be a director or a partner, you have the pressure to get business.
It's more about personal connections
exactly.
at that point rather than your skills.
Exactly.
Your day-to-day skills.
It's not how technical you are or how smart you are. It's just like who you know. And you end up spending a lot of time, effort joining a nonprofit organization, leadership summit, just to meet more people.
And that's all it is. In fact, let me give you an example with this phone call I was a part of way back when I was working at a law firm. I was in the office of this partner, not an Asian guy, but he got a call from his client who said he might be investigated by the SEC.
Right.
This partner, his bill rate, if he bills at all, his bill rate is like $1,000 an hour.
Right.
And I've always thought, how does anybody justify billing $1,000 an hour? It doesn't make sense. What can you possibly do that's worth that much? And I saw him pick up this call and say, okay, he'll take care of it. And he literally just dialed up the SEC and talked to them and got them to kind of just
back off. Yeah, I'm not surprised that happened.
And if you think about that, it took him like 6 minutes to make that call.
Yeah, he's going to bill like...
Yeah, even if he charged the $4,000 for that 6 minutes, it's completely worth it because an SEC investigation would have cost way, way more.
Yeah.
So at that point, it's not because he has any legal skills or know how to navigate the law and find loopholes.
Some would argue navigate the landscape of regulation.
But it's really more, it's not, and he's not doing that anyway. Because that 6 minute conversation didn't discuss anything legal. It was much more, hey, can you do me a favor?
I didn't hear it.
but the point being, he was paying for his connections. Right. So it's more who you know rather than what he knew.
Right. Well, that goes back to our point, right? So I guess in order for you to be successful, at least in my view, and so it seems like it's in your view, so that you need to have the connection.
Right.
And it seems to, as you move up to become successful, there's a bit of a boys club, for lack of a better term. And if you're within that network, there's a way to get connected.
And it's something I'm not fond of doing, and I think that's one of the reasons I didn't really grow my kind of freelance thing much, because I really don't like people in general.
Let's just clarify that comment.
Yeah,
you don't like to not people. You in general you like people, but you don't like to have to.
That smoozing that you had to do.
Smooching is the word.
Yeah, that I don't like. Right. And you really need to enjoy that to really move
you
up in whatever. No matter what job it is, you really do need to be a people person and be capable of smoozing and be functional and happy in that environment.
Not in every field, right? I mean, certainly.
I think in most fields.
I would certainly think in accounting and definitely in business, attorney. Definitely in business for sure.
Yeah.
And maybe in accounting firms too. But I think in general, service oriented business, as you move up, you need that aspect of you to be successful. And I don't know if just more in nature for non-Asians to do that.
And I think it's more important for Asians to do that, mainly because we have a stereotype of hanging around us as being very introverted.
Right.
Right. As not willing to socialize as much as non-Asians. So you almost have to be twice as much of a social butterfly in order to really move up.
Right. And just to counter that, I think I do see, and these are probably outliers, I do see Asians in law firms that are very well connected.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean,
but in general, they're not.
But right, when you take a general view, it isn't. And I think, I can understand that. It's a different culture growing up, different teachings, different learnings. And
right.
I mean, it's, I think at least when I was growing up with, when you hang around Asian schools or any teachings from our parents or whatnot, it's more about being humble and, yep. and don't brag. And,
right.
You know, pretend like, oh, it's nothing big. Right. Even when you accomplish something huge, you're supposed to kind of tone it down. Versus it's the opposite for American education system, for non-Asians. It's, you know, if you, you know, toot your own horn. If you've accomplished something, tell everybody.
Oh, absolutely. Right? In a professional setting environment, in any industry, I think marketing yourself should be, you know, if you have the ambition to grow and, yeah. and move up the ladder, marketing yourself, respectfully.
Right. Doing, I mean, it doesn't mean being a braggart or right. anything, but you have to bring, you know, you have to put yourself in front of everybody and bring it to their attention right. that you have the skills.
Right. And, you know, and I've seen this quite a bit because I've seen, so in business, in finance, there's two category, right? When you go into finance, you could just almost tell that all the front facing, client facing aspect of that, you know, finance would probably, you know, non-Asian, or the back office, like the accounting, right. and all this stuff is Asian. And part of it is because they don't need to deal with other people. Part of it is because, you know, I think non-Asian culture, they tend to be more outspoken,
right.
and you know, just getting in front of the crowd and, you know, articulate themselves, talking. And by doing that, you just put your, just like, elevate yourself, right? That's part yeah. of marketing yourself.
Because, I mean, and to be honest, from the other side, you know, if you don't talk about yourself, how am I supposed to know you even
exactly.
exist?
Exactly. And if you could articulate an idea across in layman's term for someone that has no technical background.
You know, that's the thing. Let me give another piece of advice out yeah. into the world here. Don't assume the person you're talking to is really smart. I used to be.
Oh, yeah.
I used to assume, oh, these guys, you know, they're attorneys. They're you know, working. They've got this cushy job. They've got to know what they're talking about.
Right.
So I would hold back on, you know, dumbing things down because I assume that they know about it.
Right.
But then on the other side, they're almost like, oh, why didn't you tell me about this? Or right. why didn't you explain it? And so, you know, when you speak and promote yourself, and don't be afraid to even talk about just the basics.
Oh, I 2000% concur with that. I recently been to a conference and held by a law firm, and the head partner was talking about a subject which I'm somewhat familiar, more familiar than him.
Right.
And he was basically addressing the crowd, and he was making a couple of points. From what I know, you know, he's pretty off, you know, in terms of, you know, what the industry is,
right,
and what exactly what he's saying. There's a huge disconnect as what's happening. He was making a comment about the banking industry and some of the treasury function. It was a huge disconnect. If you talk to any expert, he would be like, what are you talking about? But he was the head partner. So there's two reasons when you talk to in front of people. Yeah, you could either they don't know what they're talking about and you decide to dumb it down for them.
Right.
The other side is that when you're actually dumbing it down to them, the listener on the other side listens to you and they actually understand. Then they actually provide more value to you as a
right.
speaker because you're like, oh, you're connecting with them.
Right.
So I definitely do that. And The more layman term you could put any subject into, I would say that is probably the better because you could connect with more people, more audience.
Yeah.
So that's exactly. definitely a good advice.
While we're on the advice, any other advice for our young listeners or even old listeners, really?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. We sort of like blab through almost an hour of, you know, just going through our career. I don't know if we hit any point that's meaningful. But I think it's good experience that we share at least through our career. You know,
because careers are important.
There.
I mean,
right.
like good chunk of your life is going to be dedicated to whatever career you choose. So it's a big decision. It's an important decision. And, you know, I mean, I think there's a tendency to rethink and maybe even regret a little bit when you get older if you choose the wrong thing, but you know, sometimes maybe you just have to go down that road before you realize that it's not the right one.
Yeah, now, and if our listeners are still listening after I don't know how long, well, first, thank you. But I think the sort of the takeaway really just, you know, and this is something that I sort of noticed just right now, really, you know, as you go down your career path, once you get to a certain point, there's really no reset because honestly, you're not going to take a pay cut, you're not going to take a step down, you're not going to work for someone that's 10 years younger than you. That's not going to happen. No matter what you're thinking right now, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're 20 years into your career, chances are that you'll be in that field for the remaining of your career. You know, so the takeaway is really, look, if you're still early on in your career, you find something that you don't like and you want to sort of explore, I think I would say be brave.
Yeah,
right? First couple
it.
Years,
do it.
Explore. You might come back to the same industry, but at the end of the day, you know.
Right? Yeah, you can all, and that's the thing, you can always come back to the industry, right? But at least you won't regret it that
right.
you didn't give it a try 20 years down the road.
Right, and you know, for both of us, I don't think we'd regret our career path.
No, I mean.
Have we chose differently? I don't know.
I don't even know what we would have chosen differently, honestly.
Yeah. Maybe we haven't found our passion yet, but you know, either way, I think, you know, do your reset if you want to do reset early on. Otherwise, that reset is not going to be available for you.
Right.
So think from a career standpoint. Explore early and don't let money or
yeah. I mean, obviously, well, money is important, but I would say don't weigh it as much as we tend to do, especially when we're young.
Yeah.
You know, give more weight to what you will like and all the other considerations, whether or not you're actually doing something meaningful. I think that's much more important.
Absolutely. And so. I wish I knew you when 20 years ago. know that you that is today.
I
want to
say
ago.
I've known you like almost 30, 40 years ago.
Maybe the knowledge. All right. So that's all the time we have today. Thank you for listening. We appreciate your time. And until next time, here's Derek and Andrew signing off.
Take care, everyone.
Bye.